Assalamu alaikum. Just wanted to provide a quick update to everyone as we head into the fall. Here at Muslim Women in Finance, we've had a very busy back to school season, but have been doing lots of work behind the scenes. So I'll share some of that with you now before we get in today's episode. After our last webinar with a Sharia portfolio, we've been working hard to build connections with partners and alhamdulillah have secured two new upcoming topics and webinars with our friends at the Peaceful Family Project in Ijara CDC. So keep an eye out for episodes relating to the importance of financial stability and establishing home ownership. We are also excited to announce our partnership with Wellness Surge, and we'll be sharing their products as our values align with health and wellness being a huge part of financial well-being. So please see our affiliate link now included in all of our show notes. And please continue to share, rate and review us, and send any episodes to anyone who you think might be interested in our content. And as always, let us know what you'd like to hear more of, or if you have any ideas for future episodes or topics. On today's episode, we take a brief deep dive into the Enneagram and how it might relate to us as Muslims, as well as what that might mean for understanding how we handle our personal finances. For those who aren't familiar with the Enneagram, it can best be defined as or understood as a branch of understanding the human psyche and taught as a typology of 9 interconnected personality types. It can be useful for us as Muslims as we gain insight into ourselves or on self-exploration journeys, and it can really be a catalyst for spiritual transformation. Gaining that insight can also be helpful as we skim the surface on behavior finance and understanding how we make personal finance decisions. So with that being said, Jazakumullahu khairan, and now on to the show.
Welcome to the Muslim Women in Finance podcast. You're joined by Amira today, and Lisa unfortunately cannot make it today, but I have two very important guests with us today, and that is Rehinuma and Najiba from the Enneagram podcast. So I'm going to hand it over to Najiba, who will explain a little bit about their podcast, and or Rehinuma, I'm not sure who's doing the introduction, and just give us a little bit of background of what your podcast is about and what prompted you to start something like this.
Yeah, so Najiba and I met several years ago over a mutual interest in the Enneagram. And during the pandemic, we got back in touch and decided that we wanted to start a podcast about the Enneagram. And as we developed the idea more and more, we really wanted to highlight how it affected us as Muslims and kind of our spiritual journeys. So we decided to make the podcast about like different figures in Islamic history, and as well as like we focused on the centers, which are like the head, heart, and body centers, because we felt those had a lot of connections to like Islamic ideas around spirituality and the growth of the individual and the integration of the individual. So our podcast really dives into the connections between the Enneagram and Islam. And I think we, you know, have really enjoyed kind of exploring some of the connections. It was actually like a new project for us as well. And I think Najiba and I kind of like, you know, took it as a creative project and sort of explored what really kind of made it work for us, you know, as like practical and like applicable as Muslims. Najiba, what about you? Do you want to add anything?
Sure. Yeah, I think we both came to the Enneagram on our own for personal reasons. Like I know Rahinuma talks about studying temperament to understand her children as a parent. And I studied the Enneagram first as a way to understand some struggles I was having in my personal life and work life. And I think what got me really hooked onto it is just how it was able to provide a really unique window into the self. And as someone who's always been kind of fascinated with studying the self, psychology, Islam's viewpoint on the self and knowing the self and how to kind of struggle and wrestle with your inner self, I found the Enneagram to be the first thing that actually let me take a sneak peek behind what my nafs looks like and what it might be telling me and the stories I'm creating, and really just linking that back to my practice of Islam. Was something I really wanted to explore more. And so our podcast is our way of exploring that together and learning and, you know, hopefully sharing what we're learning as we go.
Yeah, we're curious, Amira, what your Did you guys have a similar process in starting Muslim Women in Finance podcast?
Yeah, I will say that it generally, it did stem from a passion, I would say, on personal finance, and even just trying to look at it from through a personal view. And then I think because you kind of delve into a lot of these topics, and then you just subsequently learn a lot about it, that you just generally want to share it. And so I think, you know, given that the Enneagram has done the same thing for you guys, I think, and even specifically, it's kind of giving you a different insight into your own personal growth. And I think it's kind of remarkable. I know I've heard of the Enneagram and I have come across some of them, but maybe, you know, just thinking of our listeners that don't have an idea of what the Enneagram is, and or maybe just give us a brief overview of what that looks like and share for our listeners who may not be too familiar with it.
Sure. So the Enneagram is a 9-point structure, and it goes around in a circle, and you just have 9 points that you mark all the way around the circle. There's connections between all of the types, whether the ones that are right next to you, the ones that are across from you. And they indicate sort of like a growth path or a stress path. And they show you kind of where you go when you're, you know, like I mentioned, in your growth or when you're in your stress point. And one of the things we highlight in our podcast is that there's kind of 3 centers that you can divide the Enneagram shape into, and that's the body, heart, and head centers. So the 3 types in the body center are 8, 9, and 1. In the heart center are 2, 3, and 4. And in the head center are 5, 6, and 7. So usually we're born with a dominant type, and then we have a wing. And usually we don't change or shift too much. But it's we do sort of, like I mentioned, move around the Enneagram in terms of our growth or our relationship to others. And there's no real significance in the like numbering. It's not like one, it's not some sort of order in terms of like smallest to biggest. It's just like literally sort of a position that you take. And I kind of like to think about it as like trees in a forest that have sort of been positioned in relationship to one another, and it sort of represents how we grow or how we interact with one another. And each type has sort of like a childhood story in terms of the formation of their type and in terms of this sort of what they're seeking. And a lot of that is related to like a spiritual path or a desire to connect to, I think Najiba and I like to think to God. And that, you know, this is what the Enneagram does, is it really describes in detail kind of what that journey can look like. So let's like, we joke around that it's kind of like a, almost like a handbook or a guidebook to yourself. Once you figure out like where your type is, you can kind of go in and see like, oh, wow, like this is really like describes me and some of my characteristics and some of my tendencies. And it allows you to kind of hone in and sort of understand yourself a little bit better. And I think it really provides some self-knowledge. So the other thing that I'll kind of just share is that the centers actually have a relationship to some emotions. So the body center has a relationship with anger. The heart center has a relationship with shame, and the head center has a relationship with fear. And we go over that in our episodes tied to the different centers. And I think it's like really interesting because there's like a lot of connections with Islam in terms of those emotions as well. I would say that's probably the major overview of the Enneagram itself. There's like also Najiba is going to talk about subtypes, which is kind of like another element or another like variation of the type. So we also like to talk about wings, which are like the ones that are right next to you as well. So any questions, Amira, about the Enneagram as I was describing it?
You did a really good job at kind of explaining what the Enneagram entails. Would it be safe to say that Enneagrams are essentially an enhanced personality retests and to help figure out who you are and how you handle things. It really takes that experience, you know, from childhood and things like that, and puts that into, so I would say like personality 2.0. Just trying to think of, for the person who may not have heard of Enneagrams before, what's the best way to really explain that to someone? And I'm looking forward to kind of hearing more about what each of the types are and what that might look like in terms of how they handle their finances. So thank you.
Yeah, I think that's an oft kind of framework that, especially in the Western context, that the Enneagram tends to fall into, which is personality typing. But those who, I think, go deeper into it start to realize that it's much richer than that. And it's a lot more esoteric, I think, is the word I would use. So it's like, you know, a lot of it is the process of meaning making and exploration of the self, the nafs, as we like to call it. So it's a lot about psycho-spiritual development, more so than just like, let's say this is my type and this is how I like, you know, this is my personality and things like that. Like it's about your growth. It's about your kind of energy around like your emotions, like fear or shame. So I think it's like a lot richer than a lot of personality typing mm-hmm. systems, but I do think that that's how a lot of people are often introduced to the Enneagram, and kind of at the surface level, oftentimes is like the easiest way to interact with it. But I think Najiba and I both would agree that it's like, if you want to go deeper with it, there's that option. And it is really like, I think, gratifying once you figure out what your type is, or even your center, like that, you know, you work with that emotion, or you're more in tune with it. And Najiba talks about that emotion, the emotion of anger in our podcast, and I talk about the emotion of fear a little bit. And I think it's just like a very unique system that kind of bridges psychology, spirituality. So that's what I would say about the mm-hmm. sort of like typing. We actually like discourage typing other people.
Yeah.
It's very exciting initially. Like I always like talk about my initial like interest in the Enneagram and being like getting really excited and like typing everybody in my family.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's not recommended.
Yeah. I would just add that the whole concept of typing is a little bit alien to the initial teachings, which were about like, how do you understand the traps of the nafs, and like, where do we sort of get stuck when we're dealing with like our ego self? And the idea is you want to find that point that you're stuck on and sort of loosen up that grip. So I would say finding your type is like the beginning of the journey, because it just shows you where you're starting.
Mm-hmm. It almost but gives ideally, you direction, right?
Like you yeah, exactly. So it's not where you want to end up. It's almost like just the initial mirror that you need to see to then chart your journey.
So as you know, we talk a lot of personal finance with our audiences. And so maybe we can go through some of the different types and those different subsections and just kind of see what that would look like in terms of how an individual might relate to personal finance with some of these Enneagram types.
Salam, fellow sisters. My name is Rizwana, and I'm an investment advisor with Sharia Portfolio, a halal wealth management company. It's exciting to see so many of you here growing and improving your knowledge of personal finance. At Sharia Portfolio, we help many individuals like yourselves to become prudent investors in a Sharia-compliant and ethical manner. I'd love to have a conversation with you to learn about your goals and explore options that suit your needs. So don't hesitate, give me a call at 510-684-5196 or visit shariaportfolio.com to learn more. Remember, you don't need to compromise your values, because there is a halal way to invest.
Sure. So I was actually going to start with explaining a little bit of the concept of like the mm-hmm. type and the subtype. Sure. So there's a concept in the Enneagram that, you know, there's these nine types, these nine points on the circle that sort of give that meaning making system that Rahuma was mentioning, like, you know, what do I value? What do I care about? what makes me tick, what am I paying attention to in my environment. So that sort of is something that you learn by typing yourself either through like an interview or through reading books or, you know, doing some sort of like exploration process. So we'll talk a little bit about how each type might focus on the idea of, for example, you know, what does it mean to live a meaningful life? And then how might that impact how they relate to money or spending, or what kind of life do they want to create for themselves? Or how do they relate to concepts like, you know, budgeting and planning? So that's one aspect is the type. And another aspect that's not as widely known, but right now I'm actually studying it with one of the authors that writes a lot about this, Beatrice Chestnut. And this is the concept of the instincts. And so within your Enneagram type, there's three instincts that might be dominant. So, you know, one would be a dominant instinct, one would be a secondary, one would be a third. And the reason I'm bringing that up, even though it's like a little bit more complex, is one of them specifically relates to survival. So the three instincts identified in the system are self-preservation, social, and what's called sexual or one-to-one. And each of those instincts has to do with, like, you know, how we survive in this world. So, you know, as human beings, we need to make sure we're safe, that we have a roof over our head, that we know how to survive. We also want to make sure we're connected to the group. That's the social instinct. And then we also want to find a mate and find that like special relationship. And that's the one-to-one or the mating instinct. And the self-preservation instinct, I've actually been learning a lot about recently. And that's the one that really has to do with how do I think about what do I need to be safe, to be secure? Like, how do I clothe myself and feed myself and take care of my body? And how do I plan for the future? And so that actually is what I found has the strongest link to, you know, this idea of how do we deal with money? Because a person of any type who's dominant in that self-preservation instinct is going to spend more time and resources thinking about these very practical matters in life. Whereas somebody who's repressed in that instinct, and I actually am repressed in that instinct, which is why I find this so fascinating, is not going to really invest that much time and energy into thinking about those practical matters. And it's actually going to be a blind spot for them. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing I wanted to start out with before even getting into the types.
Yeah, that's interesting, because when you say that, I kind of picture an individual who's dominant in that self-preservation subtype that you were talking about. I think the self-preservation, and that they're the ones investing the energy in their budgeting, right? They're the ones that are looking at their finances on a daily basis and really like, I can see how that fits that type very well. And not everybody does that, right? And that's not, that's quite interesting actually. And it's easier for others to do, and it's not for some, so. Yeah.
Yeah. And the idea behind the instincts is they're all three are important, but as the theory goes, there's one that we tend to hyper focus on and we develop like hyper vigilance around it. Mm-hmm. So someone who's dominant in self-preservation, they might be hyper vigilant about security and safety and making sure everything's like set and like worrying about the future and all this stuff. Whereas somebody who has it as their second instinct, it's important, but it doesn't like, you know, take over all their mind space. So it's sort of mm-hmm. like you have a normal level of awareness, but then if it's your third instinct, it's the one that you sort of gave up on. So you were like, mm-hmm. you know what? I don't need to care about that. Like someone else will figure it out, or I'm just never mm-hmm. going to get it. So you just sort of like put it to the side. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, part of this work with the types and the instincts is to recognize which thing you're overdoing, which thing you're underdoing, and then like pay a little bit more attention to the thing you were neglecting. And, you know, what I find fascinating about it is it's not just about money. It's about, you know, how do I take care of my body and like the food that I eat? And how often do I shower? And how often do I clean my room? And how often, like all these things that have to do with your personal body and your survival. And even this concept of like taking action, like mm-hmm. getting things done, that's all related to this instinct. And so, yeah, just to kind of speak more to that about how some people naturally do this and it's like always on their mind. And for other people, it's like a huge blind spot.
You could even like argue that would be like a self-care, you know, somebody who focuses on self-care, because you could say that individuals who take time for themselves, whether that's in terms of focusing on what they're eating or how much time they spend on certain things, it's all part of self-preservation, self-care. So yeah. And I'd be curious to see what like women versus men dominance, and you know, because I feel like maybe women tend to not self-preserve. I don't know, maybe that's a generalization, but yeah, very interesting concepts.
Yeah, I'm a social self type dominant, and self-rest is probably my least dominant type, so I kind of struggle with like, I'm the type of person who probably doesn't drink. I don't drink enough water. I know that already. And I remember one person describing it as like, it's like what you notice when you walk into the room, like, is your dominant type, subtype. So like you walk into a room and you notice like where the bathroom is, where the food is, where the water is, where the most comfortable seat might be. If you're a social subtype, you would notice like, what are the people doing? Where's the conversation happening? Like, what are the dynamics in the room? And if you have a one-to-one instinct or the sexual instinct, you might be like looking for that connection, like where, you know, who might you connect with in the room and might share like a real strong connection with, or a more intense connection with. So I think the finance piece is interesting in the sense that I think generally speaking, you can say that a self-pressed type will be more attuned to their needs in terms of physical safety and well-being. And I think wealth accumulation kind of, you know, makes you feel better, but it doesn't always actually, I would probably say, correlate exactly to being wealthy. It just means that you are interested, or you're attuned, or your natural instinct is towards that. But I will say, like, it doesn't mean that you're going to be, that makes the self-pressed person rich. It just means that they have like an interest in that area.
or even somebody that would be like dominant in self-preservation isn't always, may not always be successful. Like you could have a socially dominant individual who's just so successful at their job that, you know, they naturally become wealthy as a result of that, or however that.
Najeeb, but do you want to talk a little bit about the types and how they kind of show up when it comes to finances?
Yeah, sure. So I think a good way to see the connection would be to just understand what each type is looking to achieve. And so I'll try to, you know, sort of briefly give an indication of that and how that might relate to the concept of how to take care of one's finances. So starting with type one, this is a type that has a big investment in being good, working for causes of justice, being righteous. And another part of that is sort of a suppression of one's like inner impulses and desires, because there's a sense that, like, you know, one shouldn't be too indulgent, or like, you know, shouldn't really feed that part of oneself that is having certain like impulses or desires to do things or have things or eat things, for example. So with type ones, there might be more of a sense of like discipline around how they look at everything in life, and money would just be, you know, one of those arenas where they might be better, for example, at the concept of budgeting and like tithing to their religious organization, and just being very like methodical and intentional about how they use money, just like they're methodical and intentional about all the things that they care about. So this could mean being specific about, you know, what they save and how they give, or what their budget is. Maybe being a little bit more strict with themselves when it comes to, like, you know, not overspending or over splurging. It might mean, you know, wanting to live a lifestyle that's frugal, because that's what righteousness looks like. So with type one, it really depends on what their concept of being good and righteous is and how they believe that relates to money. So it could mean being very frugal, or it could mean being very generous and, you know, giving money to a lot of causes, but the intention there has to do with like, what's the right thing to do with money? So that's what I would say about type one. Rahima, what would you add to that?
No, that was a great description. I'm going to let you actually go through all nine types because I trust you.
Okay, so I'll run through them, and then we can sort of circle back at the end. So that's a little bit about type one. With type two, there is a focus on giving. So this sense of generosity, what can I give to others? How can I be of service? So you might find those themes being expressed in, again, giving to charity or hosting charitable events, doing a lot of community work. So there's this emphasis on others. So not so much what do I want to spend on myself, but, you know, how do I give to others? At the same time, twos are an image type. So there might be a certain amount that's invested in, like, you know, how do I look or where do I live or, you know, what are the things that contribute to whatever it is, whatever the image is that, you know, I'm projecting out there into the world. But there's more of maybe a sense of selflessness or, you know, money should be used for X, Y, and Z things that help the community or help others. So that's one aspect of how type two might connect to wealth and finances. And there might also might be a tendency to overlook one's own needs. That tends to be the blind spot for type two is where am I in this equation? You know, I'm sort of like the Mother Teresa, but like, you know, is there any self-care that I need to think about or factor into how I use my money? Moving to type three, type threes are also what's called an image type. So there's more of a sense of connection or desire to be successful, for example. So in this case, the relationship to money might have to do with status symbols or, you know, I'm working hard so that I can get this house or this car or provide a certain lifestyle for my family or be seen as successful. So you might see that being expressed in, you know, certain ways of spending wealth or acquiring wealth, or maybe there's just this message that, you know, one dot when they were young that, you know, to be successful means to be a doctor or a lawyer or, you know, get to this level of wealth. So that can factor into, you know, how threes might be thinking about money or maybe feeling a lot of pressure to earn money or pressure to use that money for certain things. So, you know, at some point, you know, a type three might have to ask themselves, like, you know, what do I really want? And, you know, how do I factor that into how I use my money? And again, these are the same questions that would come up in other areas of life, because that same question here of like, you know, what do I truly want is going to be something that's important for the type three to ask themselves, not just related to money, but in terms of, you know, everything that they're doing. With type four, this type is sometimes seen as like the rebel, like not really wanting to conform to other people's images of themselves. Also tend to have like a real eye for like beauty and art and, you know, things that are just like aesthetically pleasing. So you might find someone, you know, loves to buy beautiful like handbags or buy beautiful art, or, you know, there's just this attraction to things that are beautiful or unique. You know, someone of this type may not be that attracted to like budgeting or frugality, or they might be if they're self-preservation instinct and they might be very careful with their money. So in this case, I would say the type four connection to money can really be about just responding to what they are interested in at the moment. It might be certain moods that they have that, you know, kind of influence what they want to buy or what they want to shop for. But there could be a sense of needing to find balance or discipline with, you know, how they look at money and, you know, what it is that they really want to prioritize. Going on to type five, this is a type that is most likely, I would say, to be a minimalist. Part of the type five strategy for dealing with life is to like contract and need less, so they have to ask less from others. So this is like the most likely type to like sell all their belongings and like backpack and, you know, live out of a suitcase because they really don't have a sense that they need much. And so, you know, type fives could be anywhere with money, from like creating a lifestyle where they have to earn very little so that they don't need to have a lot of things. Or, you know, if they do happen to have wealth, they may have no problem parting with it because it's just not that valuable to them for its own sake. So, you know, as a five, you know, your sort of values around what you're doing and why you're doing it are going to, again, play a big role in how you deal with money and use money. But yeah, there's definitely like a minimalist aspect to five that can come into play with money. And you might find a type five is more attracted to certain concepts around minimalism than someone of like a type four might be, who's more attracted to like beauty and aesthetics and collecting art. So that's one thing to think about in terms of type relationships.
Yeah, I think it's helpful to hear what different types are and how it might relate to money. So
type six, I would say some issues related to money might be them having maybe some fears around like, do I know how to manage my money? Who can help me manage my money? There tends to be more of a security orientation with six, but this could manifest as saving a lot, or if it's a blind spot, spending a lot. So there's kind of just a maybe ambiguity or ambivalence, I would say, towards the relationship with money, just as there's potentially that same ambivalence towards other things. So you might have a six who's really into saving and, you know, being frugal, or one that's like really not that concerned with it. But I think what would unite them is maybe some type of underlying anxiety about like money. Will I have enough? Am I going to be able to support myself? Those kind of things. With type seven, there is a real, I would say, hunger for experiences, wanting to try new things, maybe being into food, being into travel. So I would say for sevens, money might just be a tool to get those things or to experience those things, not so much a concern with having money, but just having the freedom to do those things. So a question for a seven might be, you know, like, how might budgeting or planning help me achieve the goals that I want to achieve with my money? So again, could be somebody who saves up a lot to do the things that they really want to do, or someone who maybe spends impulsively. Again, depends on a little bit on the subtype. For type eights, they can also, you know, range in their relationship to money. They tend to be a go big or go home type. So they might want to buy the big house or the fancy car if that's something that they really like. You know, or they may want to give to charity or save. They're sort of have this ability to do big things as long as they put their mind to it. So they might be, for example, reluctant to budget unless they really feel bought into the process. But they're also the type who I would say, if they do sit down and create a budget, they're more likely to stick to it because they have a lot of follow through when they put their mind to something. And then finally, type nine is a type that may, you know, not necessarily have a set vision for how they want to use their time or their resources or, you know, even their life. Like, they tend to be a little bit more fluid. So it might take them longer to come around to the task of budgeting and planning. But it's something that they benefit a lot from because it helps them create a sense of like routine and stability, which is something that they value a lot. So that's something they can really benefit from, but it might they might need a little bit of help to kind of tackle that.
Now, from what I understand about the different types, so you could have a main type and then your wings, as you guys had mentioned before, you can kind of, the numbers that are next to them, is that correct? How you can kind of have different features of those side wings? Does that kind of make sense? If I'm articulating that correctly. Okay. Now, how about when individuals say they find or they relate to things from all different types? Like, how does that work in the Enneagram?
Yeah, I mean, I think what happens is that you definitely feel a connection to the journeys of each type. I know for myself that, like, there are certain types on the Enneagram that, like, I just know that that's kind of a little bit of a stretch for me. because that's not where I'm at most of the time. Like type fours are kind of known to be like the romantic individualist, and Najiba said they're a little moody and things like that. So I know for myself, that's like when I meet someone like who's a type four, I'm like, oh, like that's interesting, but it's like I know it's not me. I don't know if that makes sense, but it's kind of like, it's almost like sometimes Najiba and I talk about like color spectrums, like you feel a sense of like energy that emanates from people. I definitely like feel like I have a lot of relationships with a lot of the types and probably all of the types. And that's where I think it's like what you're saying is like you will feel connection, because that would be like, oh, I know that person, or I know like you'll have like a strong connection with at least four of the types on the Enneagram, like a very strong connection, and then definitely like a connection with all of the types on the Enneagram.
And maybe we'll just take a couple of minutes to maybe wrap up regarding the Enneagram and where we can find you and your podcast.
Sounds good. So yeah, in terms of, you know, wings, like they often say your wing is like your, you can have a dominant wing and a less dominant wing. You know, I actually go back and forth on my dominant wing versus my wing, like my dominant type and wing. So I don't think it's uncommon to feel like, oh, like I really like or feel a strong sensibility. I've also heard that like sometimes your wing can get stronger as you get more kind of integrated or thoughtful about your journey, your spiritual journey. So you can kind of expand to sort of more of a broader, like as Najiba was saying, like starting with your tribe is just kind of like the beginning, and then you're sort of expanding. Our work with the Enneagram in terms of centers is a lot around like the spiritual kind of history of the Enneagram in terms of integration of the three centers. So like ideally, you are actually going all the way across the Enneagram in terms of head, heart, body. And they say like, if you're only like actually on one plane, it's like you're not really fully engaged or like alive, and so you really need to kind of come alive in all of the centers, like your head and your heart and your body all need to sort of be engaged fully in order for you to be spiritually healthy, sort of alive and transform, like having a sort of transformational sense of like your place in the world and your connection to others. So I actually like that a lot, because I think that one of the things that does happen with either typing or personality systems or just in general, like as human beings, we kind of get stuck in certain habits or patterns. And so I think what the Enneagram really does is allow you to sort of transcend some of those and sort of, first of all, observe them, identify them, and then sort of see whether or not they're benefiting you, and then open them up. So the ideal thing is not really for you to actually get stuck in a type and see like, I am this type, but the thing is like for you to sort of go on this journey of exploration. We sometimes, like, I think Beatrice Chestnut, the one that Najiba's working with, talks about the hero's journey. Mm-hmm. So you're going on an arc and you're trying to get to back to yourself, really, but more fully aware of all of your senses, and you're engaged in your body and fully able to sort of realize like what you want to realize or actualize your full potential. But yeah, I mean, I think Najiba really covered the bases in terms of like the types and their dominant sort of desires or their like needs, what they tend to sort of, we call them vices and virtues. So the things that they kind of really, that drive them. And how they like connect with money or wealth building. So I hope that was helpful for folks. And we're hoping to do like our next series on like each type and sort of like exploring each type and bringing on people who are that type to talk more about that type. But I'll let Najiba close us out with any final thoughts.
Yeah, no. So I think, you know, all of this is part of this process of self-exploration, and that's really the main benefit of learning the Enneagram, is like finding a way to like dig deeper into like your intentions and what you are sort of what you're aiming towards, either like consciously or subconsciously, in terms of like your actions and your thoughts, how you're living your life. And it just gives you like a chance to reflect on all of those things, and see, you know, if it's in alignment with, you know, what your true purpose is, in this world. And so yeah, that's been a lot of the motivation for our exploration of the Enneagram and how it relates to all of these different things. So would love to have you guys join us on our exploration. So our podcast again is called Muslim Enneagram, and we just finished a few episodes on the centers and are about to get started with doing a deep dive into the different types. So would love to have you guys check us out and write to us at MuslimEnneagram.com.
That's excellent. Thank you both, Najiba and Rahinima, for sharing your insights. I think it's a great intro to Enneagram, and it certainly would intrigue our followers in terms of personal finance and it relates. So I really appreciate you both coming on.
Yeah, thank you for having us. Really nice of us to connect and yeah, share our podcasting journeys.
Absolutely. Yeah, we'd love to work with you guys further if there's any opportunity to do so. So we'll keep in touch, inshallah.
Awesome, inshallah.
All right, you guys have a good night, okay?
You too.
All right.
Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum.
We want to take this opportunity to thank each and every one of you for taking the time out of your day to listen to our show. Feel free to reach out to us at muslimwomenandfinance@gmail.com with any thoughts, comments, feedback, or questions. We would love to hear from you. And you can also find us on Instagram at hashed.fine, F-I-N, and at Amiri, and join the Facebook group Muslim Women and Finance. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and please leave us a rating and review. Thank you.